everyone in podcast land and NPR land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies here on NPRIllinois.org. I'm Jeremy Gechner, the editor-in-chief, and joining me today, I'm very, very happy. It's been a slog to get you, man, because of me, but we finally cooked up here. We are talking to Trey Johnson, who was good enough to cover the Heroes and Villains and Walker Stalker Convention up in Chicago for the Front Row Network. Trey, thank you so much for being on with us here today.
Hi, no problem. It was a good time.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's been a while on my part to get you on because, you know, I'm just a procrastinator in chief here over at the Front Row. But just thank you so much for being on here. And you've done a bunch of cons before, right? This isn't your first rodeo in the con circuit.
No, I mean, I have a Nintendo podcast that I do weekly called right. Nintendo Maincast, and we go to a lot of retro game cons. So I've interviewed people at those before. So I know, I've gone like for the past like 3 or 4 years, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was obviously they combined the Walker Stalker Con, which was the Walking Dead Con, in with the Heroes and Villains Fest this year. What were your first, like, just your overall impression of the weekend and such, and what you saw from this con? Like, what set it apart from other cons that you've been to? How was the experience just overall for you?
Well, I mean, it seemed to be a lot more TV focused, I guess,
right.
Like movies. I mean, even though like the people there, you know, they do movies, of course, as well. But a lot of it seemed to be focused on, I mean, especially like the Walking Dead universe stuff, like people from, you know, I talked to a guy from who was in Fear the Walking Dead and also a lot of Walking Dead, like people dressed as characters from that and a lot of zombie type stuff. But if you know, from the interviews, I ended up meeting a lot of different people who are doing different things involved with it. So ended up being, but yeah, no, I don't, I mostly go to video game stuff. So this was cool for me. It was a change of pace.
Right. Right. So yeah, well, I mean, one of those TV interviews here, it looks like you got to interview Henry Thomas from the Haunting of Hill House there. What was that interview like as you remember it?
I mean, aside from being a little nervous, I forget how early it was with him, but no, it was cool. You know, I talked to him a little bit about E.T. and like we talked about the E.T. ride for a second, which I thought was cool.
Right.
I still have a T-shirt from the E.T. experience from, or was it the E.T. adventure? I don't know. It was a ride I went to in Universal. I know it's not there anymore, but yeah, we talked about that for a second, and we talked about his books that he was working on.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, like season two of the Haunted Hill House and all that. But yeah, no, he was super cool, super relaxed. You know, he was pretty easy to talk to.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's just for me. It was like I didn't really have any clearance, I guess, to talk to any of the main stars. So I just kind of hoped that I could catch them when they didn't have a line, and I could just come through there and talk to them.
You know.
Trying to do, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that never ceases to amaze me. I think, like, everybody who doesn't cover Comic-Cons as press and stuff, like, it literally always is just kind of like, well, are they in the mood to talk to you, you know? Like, you know, it's hardly ever a setup, you know, like, oh, you know, we're going to go in a room and talk to somebody. It's always just kind of like, hey, do you have time? Hey, is the mood hitting you? So it's good that you got to talk to a few people like that. You also got to talk to Garrett Dillahunt, who I believe is one of those Fear the Walking Dead people, right?
Yeah, that's right. He mentioned that. He had also did an indie movie. One thing that kills me is I should have asked him about the Deadwood movie. I didn't even think about that
right.
When I was, you know, because I'd forgotten that he was in that a couple times as different characters, and he is in the Deadwood movie for a second. Like he did play, he gets like one line at one point in the movie. So I mean, he probably couldn't have said anything about it, but I was like, man, I wish I would have asked him about that. It's totally slipped my mind when I was talking to him. And he was one of my very first interviews too, so I was a little nervous on it. But
yeah.
No,
well,
he's
one of those actors who's like in everything too. So I mean, he's all over the place.
Yeah, I knew him. I actually knew him best from the Terminator show, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. So of course I mentioned that, you know, because I think that was one of the first times that I saw him, and probably what I remember the most of him was because I liked that show when it was on. You know,
yeah,
so I meant,
absolutely. I think that show was very underrated when it was on. That show deserved better, man. Lena Headey was also just amazing on that show.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it was. Yeah, it got canceled way before it should have. I think it only ran for like 2 seasons, but yeah, no. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, one of the interviews that I'm very much looking forward to here is you got to talk to, it looks like, the Harp Twins a bit. Tell me a little bit about that one.
yeah, they were fun. It was weird because when I was interviewing them, they answer a lot of the questions at the same time. So that was kind of a little strange to me, you know, but I mean, but cool, you know, they were a lot of fun. Yeah. It was that one. I kind of had to wait a minute. Cause I had to sort of like a schedule time to interview them, but yeah, no, they were super cool. They were very excited to talk about what they're doing. And they played a few times. I think they played a couple times at the show. So I got to see them play, and yeah, they're incredibly talented, and yeah, they seem to have a pretty big fan group there. A lot of people hanging around their booth to talk to them and have them sign stuff like that.
Yeah, awesome. So obviously a big part of any Comic-Con are the cosplayers, and it looks like you got to talk to a few of them. What stands out to you from some of the cosplayers that you talked to?
Well, the first guy I talked to was probably what I think was like the best costume I've ever seen. He was this Man-Thing, the Marvel Comics Man-Thing.
Right.
Like, it's basically like another version of Swamp Thing, but like bigger, you know. But it was you know, he had like this huge face with all these like tendrils coming down and like big eyes, and it was very complicated suit that he had. He even had built like fans inside of it and stuff like that.
Oh,
it's cool because yeah, I was just talking directly to him in the Man-Thing costume, and he was obviously into it. You know, he was, I forget what kind of foam was the foam core he used, like some sort of stuff that you could sculpt easily for it. But yeah, and he had made a really cool a Groot mask for his son as well that he was wearing, and they both just kind of talked to me in their costumes, which was fun. And I met a whole family of cosplayers as well that were there, which I thought was cool. But yeah, I don't think either of them got in the contest either. Like they I know the Man-Thing guy, he said he didn't care about the contest. It was just kind of for fun. So I mean, I think, I'm sure a lot of people are just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, those always blow me away. Every con I go to, I just see costumes, just like I could never ever even come close to making anything like that.
Yeah, it's all about dedication. And it seemed like the ones that I talked to, like, they do it all the time. Like, this is not their first thing. Like, they've done this many, many a times, and it's a fun thing. So it's like, which one, what do I make next? Like, I want to do this and this and this. So, you know, they have they have projects they're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one last one I wanted to talk to you about here. You got to talk and sit down with Crypt TV. Is that correct?
Yeah. They were really cool. They had some of their creatures wandering around. There were people dressed as them. I was not familiar with them, but the person that was helping me out that day, like, she was a huge fan. So it was kind of like, she was like super excited that they were there, kind of more than anybody else that was there. So I should definitely talk to them. But yeah, no, they're really cool. I watched a lot of their YouTube stuff after that. Like, they just have like nice, really cool, like, you know, quick to the point, like small horror stories that you can find on YouTube. They have their own channel and all that. And I guess they've probably already done it by now, but they were leading up to like a big crossover of, you know, of all their different characters, like in one thing. And that was like kind of what they were promoting. But yeah, it was just really cool to talk to them about, like, you know, different, their ideas and different stuff that they're doing. And yeah, they were super cool. Real chill.
Yeah. Anytime you got a horror Avengers type thing going on, you definitely want to get that interview. So they're about to hear all of those interviews here in succession. But before they do, I just want you to talk about your podcast, your Nintendo podcast, real quick, so that they can hear more of what you do every single week, Trey.
Oh, sure. It's just, it's like two of my best friends who are also Nintendo fans. We get together every week and we talk about what games we've been playing for the week. And of course we talk about Nintendo news and stuff like that. We do retro stuff occasionally, and we have done a few live shows, which we actually have available on our Patreon if you want to check that out. But yeah, that's basically, we cover all things Nintendo, and I've branched out a little bit as well. Like I interviewed like, guy who owns an independent used toy store, you know, about game toys and stuff like that. And we have all sorts of different guests from different places, and we've talked to, you know, like I said, we've gone to a lot of conventions. So I did like an interview with like the guy who played Johnny Cage, and I talked to the Boom Shakalaka guy from NBA Jam. He was really like stuff like that, like the guy who owns the Galloping Ghost. It's like one of the biggest arcades, and I know it's the biggest arcade here. They have like 500 machines or whatever. I talked to him this year as well. So like a bunch of interviews like that that I try to get when I can, you know, for different events. So we also actually last Midwest Gaming one the Nintendo Labo VR had just came out. So we basically went around the show floor and just showed it to a bunch of people and interviewed them about it. Like, so that was fun. Like, especially the people who are running VR booths there and to see their take on it. And that was really cool. I thought that was a fun episode. But yeah, any sort of Nintendo stuff we talk about. And since the Switch is pretty huge now, it's not very hard to find topics for that show.
Yeah, my cohort at the network, Craig, is just angling for me to get a Switch when I finally decide to get video games again. You know, probably after you know, my son turns 3 or so, I can actually start thinking about that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. So where can they find you online? Social media, website, everything. Let's get them all to your place, man.
We have NintendoMainPodcast.com. That's the main website that you can get access to most things. I stream like late at night on Twitch.tv/NintendoMainPodcast. We have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/NintendoMainPodcast. My Twitter is Nintendo_domain. I post anything that I post online there. So that's where you can pretty much find everything. I think that's pretty much it. We have an Instagram, but I don't post a whole lot of stuff there. So
you were just like us then.
If you look up Nintendo Main Podcast, you'll find it easy. Like, it's, we have like 180 some episodes. Like, so there's, we've been in there for a while. Like, it's pretty, if you just look it up on Google, you can find it.
Absolutely. Well, get yourselves over there, guys. You're about to hear all of Trey's interviews from the Heroes and Villains Fest 2019. And be sure to go over there and check out his podcast as well. Trey, thank you so much for reporting for the Front Row Network up there. And hopefully it will not be the last time we get you on the show here.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a blast to do. And yeah, no, I'd love to do another one. If, you know, just let me know whatever's coming up. I know we have conventions all the time here, so it's
no shortage of conventions here. But thank you very, very much, Trey. And we will enjoy listening to all the interviews that you got for us there. So thanks again, man.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you.
So I'm here with Garrett Dillahunt. How's it going, man?
It's going good.
This is my first time at Heroes and Villains. How many times have you been doing this for?
This is my first time as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How's it been going so far for the weekend?
Well, it's pretty early today. It's Saturday on Easter weekend. I was warned it would be crazy, and it's starting to pick up. But it's not as crazy as Atlanta was, so it's nice. I get to spend a little more time with people.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's cool that you get to talk to people and stuff like that. So so as of right now, you're doing Fear the Walking Dead, right?
That's right.
And a few other shows. I think the first thing I ever saw you on was the Sarah Connor Chronicles, though.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was I really liked that show a lot. You and your character was great on there. Do you have anything coming up aside from that?
Well, we're in the middle of season 5 of Fear, so that's happening right now.
All right.
We just had this episode off. I shot a movie called Sergio for Netflix.
Awesome.
With great cast. Wagner Moura, who played Pablo Escobar in Narcos for Netflix, and Ana de Armas is in it. It's just Brian O'Byrne. It's a great cast. It's about Sergio de Mello, who is a sort of wunderkind for the UN, this Brazilian genius who went to Iraq, sadly, proved to be the end of his life there. But it's a great story and a great group of people. Should be coming out this summer.
Yeah, I say, that sounds awesome. So it's there's not an exact release date for it? You just
no,
around summertime?
They're still finishing up the edit.
Very, very cool, man.
Yeah.
Are you doing any panels today? Or are you for the weekend?
I don't know. We're doing a panel sometime this weekend. I don't know when it is, though.
Oh, okay. So it's coming up for Fear the Walking Dead?
That's right. Okay. Me and Jenna. Jenna Elfman's right over there.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
We'll do that together, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll make sure and check that out.
All right.
Is there anything you want to say to the fans at home on the podcast?
Well, we don't have a show without you, so we really appreciate you, and thank you so much for watching, those of you that do. If you don't watch, you should consider it. If you do watch, tell a friend.
I said, definitely, yeah, definitely check out your work. You're an incredible actor. Thanks
nice
for talking
to
us, man.
Yeah, you bet.
Here with John Borowski from what was the production company?
Waterfront Productions.
And you do documentaries about true crime stuff, correct?
That's my specialty. It's specifically serial killers, pre-1940 serial killers, like H.H. Holmes, Albert Fish, Ed Gein, Jeffrey. Well, Jeffrey Dahmer is our more recent book that I published. That's the most recent case. Mm-hmm. But I published actual case files from the case, like witness statements and Dahmer's own confession.
Wow. And how many do you have so far?
I have 7 DVDs total, 5 films and a TV show, and they're all on Amazon Prime, and 4 books total.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my latest film is called Bloodlines, which is actually on the artist Vincent Castiglia, who paints in human blood, which is another fascinating topic.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's all this kind of macabre stuff.
You know? Oh, sure. What's been your favorite to work on?
You know, my favorite and probably the most popular is H.H. Holmes, because I think people will have this eternal fascination with not only the time period that he lived in, but his ability and genius to always be one step ahead of the law and you know, utilize the limitations of that time period to his advantage.
Mm-hmm. Are they... He's the devil in the White City, right?
Yeah.
Have they consulted you? I know they're doing a movie for it.
They haven't consulted me, you know, but that's been going on for like 20 years. First, Tom Cruise had the rights.
Sure, yeah.
Now DiCaprio does. He's had them for a while, and now supposedly Scorsese's attached, you know. I mean, I'd love to be a consultant. You know, I'd love to show him around Chicago and, you know, take him to all the sites. That would be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. What's like the most, like, probably the weirdest, most interesting thing you've discovered? Like through the research
on any
you've done.
Of the subjects?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just think personally, Albert Fish to me was kind of one of the worst because, you know, he would torture little children and take pleasure in their sounds of their torture, but you know he tortured himself as penance. You know, so when he was apprehended, he had a religious complex. So you know he associated cannibalizing children and drinking their blood with communion, and it's you know a day before Easter Sunday. So this is a pretty interesting topic. But but you know he so once he was apprehended, the authorities didn't believe him, so they took an X-ray of his abdomen, and 29 needles showed up on this X-ray, and I have a picture of it over here I could show you. It's just how this man lived with these 29 needles at him. And then there was this urban myth that he shorted out the electric chair when he was electrocuted, but it never happened.
Wow. Oh, so you get So were you coming into that like thinking that was a real thing?
Well, you know, I'm always dubious of that. You know, lately there was a story that H.H. Holmes could have been Jack the Ripper, and you know, I appeared on the show American Ripper. So you know, everybody of course has a theory when it comes to you know some of these serial killers or you know true crime stories. But you know, the truth is, we'll never know who Jack the Ripper is. Mm-hmm. Every week there's a new theory. So,
and I'm sure like through your research here, you've discovered stuff that people hadn't uncovered before.
Oh, much of that. Yeah. You know, I've just been you know doing research for a TV show, and you know I'm going to different locales. You know, within Chicago, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, trying to find out what's still there, what no longer exists. So it's always interesting, and you know maybe going to some of these locations and ringing the doorbell and seeing what the people say. Either they don't want a part of it, or maybe they're a little interested.
Do you ever get, like, weird feelings about it? Like, I don't know, like a, just like a weird cursedness of the locations or whatever? I know people have talked about, like, animals freaking out.
You know, me personally?
Whatever.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah. You know, I'm interested in the paranormal. Mm-hmm. I love all, you know, ghosts, and I love all that, but it's not my thing. I focus on the truth.
Sure.
But I've never really felt anything, you know. I mean, obviously, these are such a deep topic that I have to take a break and play some Nintendo games or watch some cartoons, you know, to take a break, because it's pretty deep, you know.
Yeah, but I'm sure it can be pretty depressing, like, the deeper you get into it.
Yeah.
What's like your new, like, what are you working on now? Like, what's your next thing that's coming out?
I'm finishing a book on Carl Panzram, who was the subject of my third film. The book is all about his time at Leavenworth, which, interestingly enough, when the initial book, Killer, A Journal of Murder, was published, it took the viewpoint of Robert Stroud, the Birdman of Alcatraz, who had two cells right across from Panzram.
Wow.
So he wrote about Panzram, but I found the federal file, which films in a lot of this information that was not in that original book. Mm. So I'm releasing that book. I'm working on another documentary on Jesse Pomeroy, who was 14 in 1875 when he murdered two little children. So an early case.
Wow.
And I'm writing a feature film, a couple feature films.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, like, more in the narrative, like, less documentary?
Right. More narrative, you know, definitely horror, psychological, crime thriller-based. Okay. I love Hitchcock stuff. So.
But it's not directly based on an actual...
No. No, original ideas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, I find now in Hollywood, there's a lot of the same old. They're remaking the same things. They're doing these stories we've seen. You know, so I want to do something different, not necessarily, you know, jumping on the bandwagon.
Sure. what are the titles of those, or do you have those yet, or can you unveil that?
No, I'm still working on them. So okay. You know, they're kind of untitled as of yet. You know, but I will be doing some Kickstarters. I'm shooting a trailer soon, and that trailer will be a part of the Kickstarter campaign.
Awesome. Yeah. And you said all of these documentaries are available on Prime, right?
Yes,
Prime?
They're all on Amazon Prime. If you just type in John Borowski, or even if you type in like H.H. Holmes, you'll see all my titles on there. There are some short films on there. There's a TV show, 2 seasons, and then my documentary and my latest film, Bloodlines, on The Blood Artist.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check that out. It's a pleasure talking to you, man.
Great talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. So I'm here with Angel Agla.
Veringa.
With the Kitty Works.
Angel's Visions Kitty Works.
Yeah, Angel Vintage Visions. And for those of you at home who can't see it, they're just all these beautiful pictures of cats in different situations. Like, I see a Super Mario cat. I see, like, a Harry Potter cat over here, Little Red Riding Hood. How long have you been doing this for?
Oh, I've been painting all my life. I'm originally from Lithuania, so I have 10 years of art education. I've been in fashion design. Fashion designer back in Lithuania. Mm-hmm. And when I came to United States, I just started doing art, painting, and doing art shows. And if you're asking how long I've been doing the cats as a characters, probably about 5 years.
Okay.
Yes.
It's amazing. So you do all of these are original, or are they prints, or are they original paintings?
I have some originals. The originals in frames. I have some Geikli reproductions. Mm-hmm. I have paper reproductions. We have all kind of product as well. Mm-hmm. You name it.
Have you been doing a lot of shows like this?
Yes. Yes. We do a lot of them around the country. My husband and me, we actually are business partners.
Okay.
Yeah, and my husband helps with the traveling. He actually is responsible for whole product, for making product, for all product reproduction also, too.
Do you get requests for different characters, or people will be like, hey, can you make a
cat
like this?
Oh, yes, definitely. Absolutely. So people ask, if they ask so many times, so I definitely put it down, write it down. Mm-hmm. And I have a huge list of things to paint.
Yeah.
Characters to paint, yes.
What are you working on right now? Like, what is, like, probably one of your more recent ones that you've
done? I'm actually working on a series with famous stars, like Michael Jackson and Prince, Marilyn Monroe, and you name it. All those big stars, as a cats as the characters.
Okay.
So that's going to be something new I'm going to do this year.
Okay. I'm sure you've already done, like, some Avengers Endgame stuff and... Like
I don't
Thanos
have much
and all that.
I have Mario Kitty as in the game. As
okay.
That's the probably
do you have
gaming.
Any?
But I do have Marvel.
Yeah.
I have DC, a lot of them, a lot of different ones.
Do you have like Thanos cats or anything like that?
I don't have yet. He's on my list.
Nice. I see right up there in the corner, there's a Hellraiser. You got like the Cenobite there, Pinhead cat, which
I have all
amazing,
spooky cat series. Yeah, big spooky cat series.
Yeah, there's like a Beetlejuice over there and a Silence of the Lambs. It's amazing. Yeah. Is there any situation that you wouldn't put a cat into that you're painting here? I know they're not. You don't actually dress
up
cats
and all
that.
I have to feel it. That's, you know, when I feel it, then I paint. They just, you know, just come up to me. You know, bother me.
What is your next convention that you're doing?
We actually going to Dallas.
Okay.
Houston, Dallas, those are our next ones.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that like another like comic book
Dallas,
based thing?
Yes,
or like
Dallas Fan Fest.
Okay.
It's with Informa.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you got a lot of really cool stuff here. Yeah. And where can people find you online? What's your website?
We'll be angelsvisions.com with S's. www.angelsvisions.com.
That's angels, plural. Visions, plural.
Yes.
.com. Angelsvisions.com. And you can find it on pretty much all over the place, right? You have an Instagram, right? That's,
yes.
That's your name?
Yes. It would be my name, Agla Veringa Art.
Yes.
In other words, if you just type in my name and it pops in Google search.
Oh, okay,
easily,
cool.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Hi, we're here from Kurt Zauer. He's a comic book writer. Let's talk about what you have for sale here.
Well, thanks. My story is it's kind of a supernatural hero story. The main character is Spectris. She's the ghost of Cleopatra's top assassin. She's lived for so many millennia that she's learned to kind of rejoin the world of the living, and she's trying to find purpose as an archaeologist.
Cool. So so she's dead. She's a ghost now, right?
Right. She's a ghost. The title is called Spectris and Sabanion. Her fate is intertwined with this demon named Sabanion. He's kind of a volcanic, whirling, spinning engine of destruction, and needless to say, he complicates things for her. But their fates are intertwined, so wherever she goes, she kind of has to drag him along with her, and that obviously creates a lot of problems and tension in the story. So right now I have three issues. A preview issue is kind of a short story about her teaming up with some other badass archaeologist types, and they go steal back looted artifacts from ISIS. Mm. And that's done by Sajjad Shah. He does the art for that. He's really good. He's top notch. And my first two full issues here is when she needs to break Sabanion out of Containment Facility 4, which is a kind of a supernatural prison, because she's ready to start her life. And there are problems with him being held in this containment facility, so she has to break him out, and it doesn't go as planned.
So she has to travel with him, right? You said they're connected. They have to stay together at all times.
Their fates are intertwined. Their existence depends on each other. Kind of this ancient curse that they have to conduct this ritual every full moon. So she's been going to the containment facility every month at the full moon, and it's patrolled by this guy. His name's Sorensen. He leads the moon crew. And the moon crew is kind of this security team of people that patrol Containment Facility 4 on nights of the full moon because odd things happen.
Nice. Can he kind of be like a golem for her, too? Like, can she, like, send him at things, like, to help her fight? Or is he too, like, chaotic?
I'm trying to play with the idea of characters joined by fate but don't necessarily like each other that much. So she's trying to break him out without him doing any damage or harming anyone.
Okay.
That, you know, doesn't happen the way she plans it to. So
is she planning on like locking him away somewhere so he won't cause damage after that?
Yes, and that's going to be into later issues. She plans on disguising him. Basically, he's going to be the night watchman at the museum library of the university she's trying to become an archaeologist at.
Oh, okay.
So that's more long term. My goal is to get picked up maybe by an independent publisher, or if that doesn't work out, I'll probably kickstart it and continue the story from there.
Are these? Did you publish these yourself, or how are they?
Yeah.
No, they look really good. But yeah.
Well, thank you. The artist for the full issues, his name's Topper Helmers. He's local here. He's done a number of comics, kind of old school stuff, and Wesley Wong. He's done colors for some of the bigger names. He's done a lot of coloring for Marvel, DC, and some of the bigger titles.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it looks really, really cool. Spectris and Sabanion. Definitely check that out, everyone at home. And thanks for talking to us, Kurt.
Thank you so much.
So I'm here with Alyssa Onofrio from Crypt TV.
Hi.
It's a YouTube series, right?
That's right, yeah. We're a YouTube channel with a whole universe of monsters.
Awesome. I haven't seen the show before, but I've heard that it's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what exactly do you guys
do
on there?
Yeah. So we have a whole universe of different monsters, and they all have their own series, and they're just starting to cross over into each other where the monsters are meeting. The monster we brought to this convention is the Mordeo. So basically, some campers get lost in the woods. They get so desperate that one kills the other and eats him. And then turns out he was on the Mordeo ritual site, so then he transforms into this antlered skull monster that just wants to eat human flesh.
Okay.
So we set up a dinner table here for him to invite some dinner guests. Yeah, so the new series is basically about some Girl Scouts that got lost in the woods, and yeah, they end up on the ritual site, and like they meet the queen, and it gets a little bloody. So.
Oh, okay. And are these like are they like full like narrative episodes? Like
yeah,
how like
so,
how long are they normally?
The Mordale has I think 5 total episodes. They're about 5 to 7 minutes each, and so it adds up to about a half hour. So like a full episode basically. So we have about 30 minutes for each series, and then those add into a larger story that we're kind of dialing in on with how all the monsters are connected to each other, and there's some symbols and different series that turn up from other monsters, so they're all going to be meeting and fighting each other, and there's going to be some factions that form, and so it might turn into a humans versus monster situation. Maybe some humans will team up with monsters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are some of the monsters like misunderstood monsters, like Frankenstein's monster, like that type of thing?
They have a lot going on. Yeah. So the Mordeo, pretty cut and dry. He eats people. You're desperate. The Lixie just wants you to release a piece of your past, or he will take a piece of you. So he's trying to help. Stoneheart is a witch who usually helps people who are abused, but sometimes she's just out for herself and wants power and kills them. So, and then we have Fluffy from Troubled Youth, who was a girl who her friend told her she wasn't strong enough as a human, so she needs to turn into a monster. And then she kills people. So she was kind of forced into it. So there's definitely some gray area in there.
Is there like a schedule as to when they get released?
Yeah,
like the new episodes?
So we release content every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on YouTube and Facebook. And the new episodes of the Crypt Monster Universe come out every Friday.
Okay, awesome. And when is going to be the big thing where they all get together with
all the monsters? So Fight Night is, our big fight series coming up. That's going to land in the next couple months. I'm going to say probably July, August.
Oh, okay.
But, so stay tuned to the channel and all our social media at Crypt TV, and that's where we'll be announcing all that stuff.
Nice. Did you guys get any of the inspiration for that from the old monster movies?
We have everybody in the office is a pretty big horror fan, so everybody has their own inspiration. Yeah, we work with a lot of, a wide variety of filmmakers who, all have their own monsters in mind, and everyone, comes from the different backgrounds and has, like, their own, folklore stories that have stuck with them. So, it's a lot of mix of different, classic monsters, folklore stories, and that kind of stuff.
So a lot of, like, urban legend.
A lot of urban legend and creepypasta kind of stuff.
Where do you guys shoot at normally, or
regularly? All over, We're based in Los Angeles, so mainly we shoot out of Los Angeles, but we have a team in the UK that's doing a series right now. We've done a couple on the East Coast too. So sometimes we send our teams out to different locations to get stuff, but mainly we're based in Los Angeles.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So Fright Night, that's coming up soon,
Fight Night,
right?
Yeah. So that you'll see the Mordeo in that, and then we have a new monster who's a big guy who's gonna knock some people out. So it'll be crazy.
Have you guys thought about going into full length movie territory?
Sure. Yeah. No, we're definitely building a whole universe that we want to be bigger and everywhere. So we're doing these short series to be like, hey, look how cool these guys are and what they can do. And then, we're basically hoping to bring those to bigger platforms and bigger audiences through whatever medium people are watching. Mm-hmm. So a lot of kids are online and on their phone. So a lot of our audience is mobile and watching on the phone.
Sure.
So that's why we do that is to reach them. And so then they know our characters, so when they see them on the big screen or they see them on a billboard, they're like, oh, I already know what that is, and I'm excited about it. And so we're kind of building that, trust with our audience and the just building our characters up so they know who they are when they get bigger.
Sure. I could see it even, like, being released as, like, a set, like, with all,
that
type of thing. Like, if you guys ever got into, like, physical media or anything,
Blu-rays
or whatever.
We have big plans for sure.
Or even, like, on-demand or iTunes or whatever.
There's so much that we can do. Yeah, everyone's just really excited about these characters. Like, I love them. We have a pretty young audience. I would say a lot of them are 13 to 18 years old, and then we have a lot of people in their 20s and stuff. But a lot of, young female fans who just, like, are really into it and into the spooky stuff and want to see, yeah, different different emotions portrayed in these, you know, violent ways. You know, it's just a different way of expressing yourself that is kind of misunderstood. But I think a lot of kids are into that now.
Nice. Yeah. And that's like a youtube.com/CryptTV.
CryptTV.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check that out, everybody
at
home.
Yeah,
and I'm
awesome.
Going to check it out as well, like awesome. After I get done with this.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks
awesome.
For talking
yeah,
to me.
Thank you
yeah,
for
thanks
us.
For stopping
yeah,
by
yeah.
the booth, too.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. So we're here with Henry Thomas from E.T., Cloak and Dagger, Haunting of Hill House. It's nice to see you, man.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, no problem, man. I've been a fan of yours for years. Like, I had that red hooded sweatshirt and all that when I was a kid.
It's a good look.
Yeah. One of my favorite rides at Universal was always the E.T. one where you got on the bike and you got to fly around and all that.
Did you, the one in Florida or the one in L.A.?
It was Florida.
In Florida, yeah. That's the only one still open.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they closed down the L.A. one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just in Orlando a couple of weeks back, and everybody was talking to me about the E.T. ride.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they, and I wasn't really familiar with the E.T. ride mm-hmm. that much, and they were, like, 5 out of 8 people that came up to me were talking about the smell of the E.T. ride, that it smells like a pine forest or something.
Oh, wow. Is that intentional? I know there's trees in it.
I guess.
At one point.
Yeah, I don't know, but they were talking to me like I was an authority on the E.T. ride, like I would know these things.
Well, I'm sorry for bringing it up then.
This is awkward. I'm sorry.
I don't want to bring back memories of the pine smell.
It's really,
or accusing you of the pine smell.
This interview has taken a strange turn. Yeah.
So, Haunting of Hill House, that got renewed, right, for another season?
It did, yeah. They're in the writer's room now,
okay.
Hammering it out, so I'm excited to see what the season will be, what it will hold for
sure.
All of us.
Where are they going to go from there?
Yeah, the rumor is that it's an anthology-type undertaking, so it'll be some of the same cast members in different roles as different
okay.
characters and throughout the season.
Oh, okay. So it's going to be a completely different story.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the Haunting of Bly Manor.
Oh, okay,
and
cool.
Also,
they'll do different locations.
Yeah, it'll be like Henry James, Turn of the Screw, or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds cool. Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be like.
It won't
anthology.
Be based on Shirley Jackson work.
Okay.
It'll be based on another author's work.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, yeah. Do you have any other projects coming up that you want to promote?
Yeah, I got a book that I've written, a fantasy novel that's available for sale now. It's called The Window in the Mirror.
Oh, cool.
That's something that is very dear to me because I've worked on it for the last 5 years, and I finally got it published, and mm-hmm. I'm excited about that. And that's available you can order it on Amazon or go to Rare Bird Books and get it.
Oh, okay. Is there anything you would, do you want to like a, what's it about? Like, can you give us a little summary or without spoiling anything else?
It's a high fantasy world, much like Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings. And it's about a captured soldier who has to escort an emissary to a distant city and broker peace between two nations.
Nice. Cool. Are you planning on doing like a big like a series? Like
it's the first book in a trilogy, but I'm writing the second one now and it's kind of spooling
awesome.
Out. So I'm thinking it might turn into a quartet.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And what was the name of that again?
It's called The Window in the Mirror.
The Window in the Mirror.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So make sure everybody at home checks out that book.
Yeah. And if you don't like it, it makes an excellent doorstop.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I hope nobody would be that mean.
Wow, well, it's humanity we're talking about.
that's true, yeah. Anyway, nice talking to you, Henry.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a good one.
We're here with probably the best cosplay I've seen so far. We got Man Thing here. This costume is amazing, man. Man Thing.
Thank you.
I don't know that much about cosplay. Like, can you let us know, like, what the process is here in creating this? For those of us at home that can't see it, it's like there's all sorts of, like, different, weeds and plant life all over you. Giant, like, rubber hands, like a face with the 3 tendrils and all that. Movable fingers.
all starts with an idea. You get an idea in your head, and as I tell everyone, if you're going to build a cosplay, make a couple of sketches first, at least one from the side and one, like, you know, 3/4 of an angle, so make sure you got your head completely around it. And detail. Detail is what brings it to life. Don't skimp on the detail.
Oh, yeah, the detail is amazing here. Like, you have mushrooms in the back here and, like, little just plants and weeds and stuff growing up the back and, like, leaves and stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah, actually, all the mushrooms are handmade. They're EVA foam. Most of the plant life is, like, silk flowers, things that you can buy, like, at Michael's and things like that, and you just cut it down and glue it in. The base of the costume really was a ghillie suit.
Okay.
And then, you know, I cut the helmet and made the face and all the other parts. The arms and hands are totally EVA foam with rubber joints.
Wow.
And there's just rings on the inside. My fingers are hooked, too. When I move my fingers, it moves its fingers.
Nice. And how long did it take you to put this together?
You know, when I build my own costumes, I never check price or time.
Oh, okay.
I do build them for commissions, and then I actually pay attention.
Oh, okay.
Because for my own stuff, I never want to know.
Yeah, I figured maybe a couple of years, depending on how much time you can
put into it. This is more like a couple months.
Okay. Well, yeah, it depends on how much
you're
going
to be in the business, you got to work quick.
Oh, sure, sure. Are you going to be a part of the contest later, the cosplay contest?
No. I never feel right about doing contests. I'm not really...
You're too overqualified?
Pardon?
I said, are you too overqualified?
In some ways I do, and it's like a lot of times, and I don't want to seem conceited, a lot of times the prizes, I'm like, I really don't need that or want that. Someone else would really be more happy about it. So to me, I just love getting out in the crowd and the reactions I get from people. To me, that's my prize.
Yeah, it's amazing. Did you make the Kroot mask here?
Yes. He's unfortunately growing out of that. I have to redo it for him.
This is a great impression. Yeah, is this foam as well?
It's all EVA foam.
Nice.
Sunglass lenses for the eyes. He's got to custom cut them and paint them.
And did you make the gloves too?
Yes. That's EVA foam over just knit gloves.
Wow. And is the foam for the mask like this? Is that rubber or is that foam as well?
It's almost everything I work is EVA. You can turn EVA into almost anything.
Yeah. Did you, what about the grass parts and like where did you get those from?
Well, the grass, a lot of that's plastic. You pick it up like Walmart, Michaels. You go into the section for doing like home decor for flowers and things like that and just hack them apart and glue them in as fit.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing, man. Do you have any projects that you're working on now that you want to talk about, or is that too too secretive?
No, not secretive at all. I don't currently have anything I'm building. I have a commission that I'm working on, but it's something I've done a couple times before. I'm making a singing, lighted up, singing seashell from Little Mermaid for Ursula for when she captures Mermaid's voice.
Yeah.
But for myself, my next build is probably going to be the movie Black Manta from the last Aquaman movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got the previous cartoon Black Manta from the comic books and stuff. Mm. So I'm going to attempt the movie one.
What's probably your favorite costume that you've made in the past?
Oh, God, hard to say. I'm really a Groot fan. I have 5 different Groot costumes.
Nice.
But my current one is you can't wear it for more than 4 hours. You'll pass out.
Oh, okay.
There's a big cooling issue with the upper body we haven't figured out yet.
Oh, wow.
But the only thing we can figure is I need about a $200 cooling shirt. And I'm like, I don't even have that much money into the costume.
How does this feel right now? Is it pretty cool
This one
you?
Is actually good because the base of this costume is a ghillie suit and it's nylon. So it fairly well breathes. There's a fan hanging around my neck blowing air into my face.
Okay, yeah.
Keeps the eyes clear.
Yeah.
But it's a little warm, but not as bad as some of my others. I'm used to having my head in a bucket like him all day.
Yeah.
So you learn to acclimatize a bit.
How does your head feel, Groot?
I am Groot.
Does that mean okay?
Yeah, actually, take a shot of the back of his head. Because he's short, I can't hide his fan. Oh, he's turning his head around. There you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's the fan right there.
Air in for him.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. So that's runs on battery, I take it, right?
Yeah, there's a 9 volt and a switch.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. And you have another one of those inside of yours?
Well, mine's hanging around my neck. For every costume, you got to do a little different. I usually try to hide them in the top of the head so the air blows down on you, but him being short, I can't do it.
Mm.
So we just went for the back of the head and go, it is what it is.
Who's going to take a picture of the back of my head, he said.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody does that.
So if you had, like, a, I don't know, pipe dream, like a... One costume that you'd love to make more than anything else, like if fans and heat didn't matter and all that.
Actually,
do you have like an ultimate like goal that you're reaching
two.
For?
There's two. One I'm probably going to start on this summer, and it's called Lord Iron. It's from one of the Marvel comic books where it's more God, I'm probably going to murder the title, but I think it was 1682 or something like that.
Okay.
Where it's an Iron Man, basically, from that era, almost a steampunk thing.
Yeah, yeah, no, I remember that.
You remember that? That's what I'm going to build. And my really dream I've been putting off for years is the ABC robot from Judge Dredd.
Oh, okay.
The Stallone one.
Wow.
My wife's part of a Dredd group, so I keep saying, yeah, when I get my skills get a little better, I'm building it.
Well, your skills seem to be pretty awesome right now.
Thank you.
Do you have a company that you want to mention on here?
Well, you can check me out on Facebook. I'm the Laird of Cosplay. It's L-A-I-R-D.
L-A-I-R-D.
Uh-huh. And I'm also with PopCultHQ.com. We're an online newsine.
Okay. PopCultHQ?
PopCultHQ.com. My wife's over there taking pictures for our newsine at the moment.
Awesome, man. Yeah, thanks for talking to us.
Well, thank
definitely.
You. And what group are you again?
Front Row Network is what it's called. It's
awesome.
A podcast.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. You guys are the best costumes I've seen so far. So
thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Like I said, this is my prize.
All right. So I'm here with some cosplay people here at Heroes and Villains. What's up?
Not much.
What's your guys' names?
I'm Madison. This is my father, Steven, and that's my mother, Jennifer.
Hi. And that's Anthony over there.
So did you guys make these costumes yourself? Or?
A little bit of everything. So I made this shirt and then kind of bought stuff and looked at things, got a lot of things online.
And I actually made my hammer out of an old couch cushion, some PVC pipe, a pool noodle, and a lot of duct tape.
Wow. Out of a pool noodle, you said? Like
yeah.
For the handle?
Yeah, for the handle.
You must have reinforced it then, right? Because it'd be pretty wobbly.
Yeah,
if it
we
wasn't
did.
A...
We reinforced it with, what was it, fish wire?
We used wire.
Oh, okay.
12-gauge wire for it to reinforce it, and then we drilled holes and put it up through the middle and then all the way up down the handle and around. So if you did swing it, Harley would be able to make some contact and hurt those villains up. They're all those good guys.
Is it heavy? Like how, or is it pretty pretty light?
It's maybe about as heavy as a small child.
Yeah.
Or a dog.
A small dog?
Yeah, a small dog.
Probably like 10 pounds.
Yeah, probably.
Nice. And did you make your walking stick as well?
Yes, we made the walking stick and then just took some slow time whittling it out. And did we just slowly all together do this as a family.
Nice.
And we slowly add things as we come to different cosplay events and find things to make it, the little intricacies are what make your character. So we're always looking for something to kind of finish off that character that we're working on for that cosplay event.
Do you have any plans for like future events, like anything you're working on or anything like that?
So we do go to the Bristol Renaissance Fair, and then whatever weekend it is, like we usually go steampunk weekend, so
okay.
Then we're dressed as steampunk.
Nice.
So we try to do stuff that's interchangeable too. So like his character, he's kind of made up, so his is a combination of his steampunk stuff, and then we add different things. And that's why I didn't dye the wig, so that we can use it for different characters.
Oh, okay,
so when
we
buy things, we kind of try to find different characters we can use it with.
Mm-hmm.
So last night we came and we were Wonder Woman.
Mary Jane Watson.
Mary Jane. Bendy. He was Bendy from Bendy and the Ink Machine.
Okay.
And he was...
He was just Clark, dad.
You know, oh, he was,
no,
Clark,
he was Clark
Kent.
Kent. That's right.
Oh, nice. So did you have the... did you have the Superman under your...
Yeah.
Under and all that? Oh. Are you guys doing a different costume for tomorrow then?
I might go back as Mary Jane. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah. I do have Batgirl, so that's a nice, easy one-piece suit.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys planning on doing the contest later?
We keep talking about maybe going back and forth, depending if we're still here when
yeah.
contest time.
I think it's on at, like, 4 or something. I don't know. It's, like, towards the end, but, yeah. Are you, is this a character that you created? Who are you dressed up as?
I guess they're from my drawing.
Oh, okay.
Drawings?
During the first day of school.
What's the name of the character?
Anthony Stephen Connor.
Anthony Stephen Connor.
Or okay. Anthony Thomas Connor.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So
cool.
A lot of the things that we enjoy about coming to cons is the originality of the artists that do work here. A lot of the things that Anthony has in his costume was handmade from
Yeah,
Bristol.
That glove looks awesome.
It's all leather work from the artists up there. And then once we brought it home to make it more steampunkish, we ordered some different things online, and then we added the different gears and things to it. So we'll take some of the work the artists do here, and then we'll add to it to make it more original and personal to the character that we're deciding to do for that cosplay event.
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to meet a whole cosplay family here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'm here with Diane Anthony, and you have some books that you've been writing, sci-fi stuff that you have here on the show floor. You want to talk about those?
Yes. My first book that I wrote is called Supernova, and it's about a supernova that happens too close to the Earth, and then it blasts the world with radiation, and people get superpowers from it, but as they use them, they start to go crazy and get sick, and they start to die, so they have to try to find a way to get rid of the superpowers before everybody dies.
Wow.
And then my second book that I wrote is going to be a trilogy. It's called The Rare, and it's a dystopian adventure with a girl that wakes up from trying to commit suicide, but she's mad that she didn't die. She lives in kind of a dark and dangerous city, and her friend talks her into leaving the city, and they start to discover secrets about themselves and about the government and the city that they live in, and she starts to find hope and meaning for her life as the story goes about, but she still struggles with the demons that she, with the depression and the suicide that she was struggling with at the beginning.
Mm. It sounds very uplifting. Is she,
It's
about, you know, if she can come to terms with not doing the suicide and all that. You said it's going to be a trilogy. Is she going to, like, fall back into it then probably? You probably don't want to give spoilers, but...
She does struggle with it throughout the stories. I'm about halfway through the second one, and she still has issues with it. There's going to be another character who struggles with a different form of... He doesn't commit suicide, but he takes on the form of cutting, you know, I just like to touch on different things that people struggle with, and we don't touch on those difficulties very often because they're not very comfortable to talk about, but they are very real, and the pain is very real, and it's hard to deal with.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Actually, when I was in high school, I tried to write a comic book about a guy who like killed himself, and then he was forced to go back and try to fix whatever made him kill himself originally. And it's like a quantum leap type thing where he just keeps going to different parts of his life, and it never works out.
That sounds
interesting.
I think
I only made it through like one thing. But no, this it sounds really good. How long have you been writing for?
I've been writing for, I'm trying to remember, I think 2014 I started. So it's been about 5 years. I have three boys, so I try to write in between when I can, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
When I first started writing my first one, my son was still little, so I would write during his nap time. Mm-hmm. And now they're all in school, so I have a little more time to write, but it can still be challenging.
It was a Supernova, was that the first one?
Yes.
Okay. And how long has that been on the shelves for?
It's been out for a couple of years.
Okay.
It's on Amazon, and so is The Rare. I had a co-publisher for Supernova, and it didn't really work out so well, so I'm still trying to get my rights back. But with The Rare, I have a small publisher, and I really enjoy working with them.
Oh, okay. So if there was, like, a movie version of Supernova, like, you wouldn't have any say in it, like that type of thing?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I actually did put Supernova into a competition or a contest, and they told me that my main character didn't have enough to do with the result or for the curing of it. She wasn't part of the process. Her brother was.
Mm-hmm.
So they said it was an interesting concept, but the fact that she didn't actually have anything to do with finding the cure, that it wouldn't work out.
No. Well, that sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, I mean, what they said. No. I mean, I like the premise for the book a lot. That sounds really cool, especially like in now when, you know, when people like our superheroes are more popular and all that. And I grew up reading comics and all that. So both of those ideas sound like something, you know, that I would definitely read for sure.
Yep.
What is the title of the second one of The Rare? Do you have a name for that yet?
I don't have a name for it yet. No.
Okay.
It might be The Haven or something because I can't give away too much of it.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. And
I haven't figured out a title for it yet.
And when do you think we could expect that?
Well, I told my publisher that I was working on it, and they want to do the second one too, but they were thinking of trying to have it out at the same time of year that this one came out, which was December, but it would be next year December.
Okay.
Because it takes a while to publish it.
Sure, sure. Okay, cool. Well, yeah, definitely look forward to that. And everyone at home, check out Supernova and The Rare. And you are?
Diane Anthony.
And Diane Anthony, yeah. And check that out on Amazon. You can find it there. All right, cool. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So I'm here with Camille and Kennerly from the Harp Twins. You guys played some live stuff earlier.
We did.
Yeah. You guys are awesome. So how long have you been playing for?
Well, we started harp when we were about 13. We knew someone who played the harp, and so we got to see one in person, and we were just instantly in love with the instrument.
We told our mom that we wanted to play, and she said, no.
She didn't have enough money to...
I was going
to
say, was it a price thing? I don't think
it was. And she didn't have enough money to buy us a harp or any of that sort of thing.
So she thought it was some kind of whim where, oh, they just want to be princesses or something like that.
But we really wanted to play, so we did a lot of odd jobs like dog walking and just anything we could get our hands on and earn enough money for a small used harp that we shared. And that was the beginning.
Yeah, wow. That's how we started.
How long did you guys have to use just one harp together before you got another one?
Not super long. It was probably about a year.
But we were borrowing a harp from our harp teacher, another small one, so we could play duets.
Oh, wow. Because we knew right away that's what we really enjoyed doing.
I'm sure she was tired of us borrowing her harp all the time so we could do duets. But our mom then, I think, realized we were serious, and she helped us borrow money to buy a second one so that we could play together and play duets, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
How long have you been performing for?
Oh, that's a good question. We started, I think, performing even in junior high. As soon as someone would at all let us play for their event, we'd do it.
Yeah, I think our first, quote, paid gig was we played for a friend's grandparents' 50th anniversary party, and they paid us with a gift card to a restaurant, and we thought we were so professional.
Hey, it's still payment. You know?
I know, right?
So that's how we started, just locally, and gradually just started putting things onto YouTube, and people started finding them, and
because we wanted to earn money to pay for school, because obviously school is expensive.
And we went to and got our degrees in classical music during all of this, so that was a completely different type of music than we obviously perform now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we were arranging rock and metal and soundtrack stuff, the stuff we like to listen to for harp, and just kind of doing that on the side as for fun.
Have you guys gotten to do soundtracks or movies or anything like that, scores?
We haven't. We've been so busy right now. We've had some requests before, but couldn't fit it into our performance schedule, so maybe someday it'll be fun.
We're full-time touring harpists right now, so we don't have a lot of time to do this kind of studio type work,
but we do write our own music, so we really enjoy that, and we started releasing that as well.
I saw you had a couple CDs for sale over there, right?
We do.
There are
a couple that are rock metal themed, and a couple that are TV movie themed, and then we have a holiday one, and that one has some originals.
Yeah.
So we'll hopefully sometime in the near future have a full original album.
Yeah. We write Nordic and kind of Celtic inspired original songs.
Okay.
And so that's our heritage is Norwegian, it's in our DNA, I guess.
Is that the next project then that you guys are going for?
Hopefully it'll be on the very near horizon.
That's right. Okay. Hopefully.
We just need some recording time because we've been touring nonstop.
How long are you guys on tour for?
It's pretty much been,
Oh my goodness.
We haven't had any time off in months.
So we go back and forth. We go where people hire us. So we're back and forth toward home all the time. But it's fun, but it's busy.
It's pretty exhausting, but we're blessed to be able to do what we love, for sure.
Are you guys performing tomorrow too?
We are. Okay. Yeah, we have sets on every day of Walker Stalker Con / Fan Fest this weekend.
Okay. One on the main stage, one on the live stage. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then where are you guys going after that?
Let's see, West Virginia then.
Oh wow.
That.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's for next weekend, or do you?
Yes. That's right.
All right. So you got some travel time, and then a little bit.
We do. It's a bit of a drive because we have harps with us, so we're always driving.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you guys have are those your roadies over there?
There's a lot of harp heads here.
Oh nice.
We have fans that flew in two from England, one from Scotland, one from Canada, and then there's a couple that also came in from
other states.
Wow. Oh yeah, a couple came from Greece. Yeah, so we have an amazing community of people who supports us, and they come to our shows, and it's awesome.
Are you guys doing any solo after shows or anything like that?
We should do that. We have a couple of things coming up in the Chicago area later on. One's in June, and then a couple are in August that are standalone shows. Because primarily we do concerts at theaters where people buy tickets and they come watch us for 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
We do a lot of comedy. We bring our big harps and our smaller harps.
Oh, nice.
And talk a lot in between songs and tell stories and do comedy type of things.
So
and
it's not your typical harp concert.
And it's also very different from what we do at cons, where we have, you know, we have very short sets here. Actually, this con is very unusual for us. Usually cons, we have at least an hour concert length, and then we can kind of do more of our show.
But then at our full shows, we also bring our big concert grand harps, and that we can so do half the concert on our concert grand harps and half of it on our electric harps.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, you guys are really, really good, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Where can people find you online?
Our website is harptwins.com.
Yes, okay. It's harptwins.com. Really easy to remember,
and that's, I think. This regular spell, no E on
that's
the
end. That's right,
the
Harp Twins, yes. And then they can go from there to our Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Yeah, we post a new music video on YouTube every month.
Awesome.
Yes.
What is what is your next one? Do you have worked on it?
We always keep it secret.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because then our fans like to guess what it's going to be. So it's really fun. But it's going to be soon.
Can't wait to take a look at it.
Thank you so much.
Right, cool. Yeah, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
So here we are. We're here with another author here at Heroes and Villains. What's your name?
I'm Suzanne Lambton.
Suzanne Lambton. Now, you've been writing books for quite some time, right?
I have been writing novels since I was 8 years old, but got published in 2012. And prior to that, I wrote for Star Trek Next Generation, so in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. What episodes in particular were
you on? So episode season 4, number 76, Family. So my contribution was really the part where when Wesley Crusher turns 18, he goes to the holodeck and his dead father, Jack Crusher, leaves him a message. So in the original script, it was called The Wish, and so it was an interactive holodeck program. So Wesley was able to talk to his dad, Jack, about anything and everything, but then in the version in Family, it's cut short. But that's my claim to fame in Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. No, that's awesome. That's super, super cool. They haven't called you to come back for the new Picard show?
No, they have not. And I think I ended up moving back home about 1995. I got a little bit worn out of Los Angeles. I was going to write for Deep Space Nine, but I ended up saying no and came back to Kansas, which is where I'm from.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about the books that you have here. Like, What are the stories here? What are these about?
So I have two book series. The one that's, I have, got 11 books in Dead Hearts. Dead Hearts novels is a zombie apocalypse set in the Colorado Rockies. Your survivors are up on Pike's Peak, so it's really involving. It's a young adult books, but it's really about the teenagers defending the peak, and they're up against a virus that mutates. So it's been around forever. So with each book, I added a different genre, so I could do something a little bit weird and different. But you end up with the main villains are vampires, and when there's werewolves and werepumas and demons, and it keeps going and links into ancient Atlantis. And so there is time travel once you get into NORAD. Wow. So it's just a fun, different series. My second series is The Realm of Magic, and it's dark fantasy, a little bit more like Game of Thrones. There's three books out in this series, and it's really popular over in England right now. But it's a war-torn kingdom where magic is outlawed, but your main character happens to have some magical abilities and is able to find magical weapons and magical people. So it's very fun, and it's very different from the other series, though.
So it's like a magical outlaw almost, right?
Magical outlaw, yeah. It's exactly what that
is. It's forbidden. The magic is forbidden. You can do all that. So you said that there were different genres for the other book. So aside from like horror and sci-fi, like what other stuff
with the Dead Hearts, the second book, it has a little bit more elements of sci-fi. So then I bring in, when I have time travel, there's mythology, there is history. With book four is when I brought in the mythology, when you find out the ancient gods and goddesses are created by a form of the virus. And then when you get to book five, I brought in steampunk. So Poseidon has an island in Bermuda, and you have zombie airship pirates that are operating off the island. It just gets really weird and crazy.
That sounds a lot of fun.
But by the time then you get into the spinoff series Bloodlines, and that's when I go back to time travel. So I've got your anti-hero from the first five books is now the hero. And so the timelines, which I like Bloodlines, is because you have past, present, and future. So you're trading off chapters with your main character, and it's a little complicated and strange, but it's really fun with the time travel and then linking it in with the ancient gods and goddesses and demons and even a few angels. And so when you have a series here and starts on top of Pikes Peak in Colorado Rockies, and by the time you get into this Bloodlines, then it's international, and so you're in Rome and London. And
is there a certain amount of books that you're is there an ending point, or is it just kind of just going to see where the story goes?
No,
or?
So there's 11 books in Dead Hearts, and the next three are getting ready to be published this next month, and that's Nightbreed, and it brings you back, after Bloodlines, brings you back to Colorado. So Bloodlines is really bloody. It's really, really dark. But so the things kind of get reset, and so you're back in the Colorado Rockies. But those 11 books are done. Then I'm moving on to a different series, so then I'm going to go military sci-fi for a while.
Okay.
And then I also have a gothic horror set in the Crimean War, so in the 1850s in London. So, but there's zombies again. So
yeah, it seems to be like a main through.
Zombies
are
kind
of
theme with me, and even with my dark fantasy, I do have zombies and werewolves, so I always like to keep the horror element in all my stories, but... depending on how you do the lineup with your genres, you can do different things, because it's the same genres are in my dark fantasy, they're in my supernatural horror, but you just do a different lineup, so you can do a little bit different things with the plot.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds really cool. Where can the people at home find you?
Like, so if they're people trying to find me at SuzanneLambden.com. They can find me at DeadHeartsNovel.com. These are my websites.
DeadHeartsNovel.
Or TheRealmOfMagic.com. I invite people to find me on Facebook under Suzanne Lambden. You can contact me directly. You can buy books from me. And also, I'm kind of known... I mentor a lot of young writers, so if you need advice, if you're stuck and you're experiencing some writer's block, or you just need some direction or someone to tell you you can do it, pat on the back, please feel free to contact me. I am user-friendly and more than happy to help you out.
That's excellent. Yeah, no, it's very cool that you do that. And thank you for talking to us.
Hey, thank you guys very much.
So I'm here with HSPPA. What does that stand for?
The Horror and Sci-Fi Prop Preservation Association.
Okay, and I see you have a lot of things that you've collected here from various movies and TV shows and other things.
Me and my other collectors, my curators, we're an association of about 30 collectors all over the world, including actual effects guys, actors, and then just fans and lifelong collectors, which makes it fun because we're a continually rotating exhibit. You know,
is it like is it people that work on it, or they just talk to the people that work on it? Like, how do you come across this type of these things?
Can be kind of a lame answer, but it's what I do. My 9-to-5 is hunting and saving props. So
okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
For how long?
Oh, just say how long have you been doing it for?
I've been a collector for probably 18 years or so, give or take. The museum has been working since 2015.
Where's the museum based at?
I'm based in the Chicagoland area, but we're a traveling museum. We're a nonprofit traveling museum.
Yeah.
We do conventions all over the country. We do now have a brick and mortar opening outside of Phoenix. It's a combination bakery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's called Spooky Swirls.
Wow, okay.
It's a horror and sci-fi themed bakery with things like Sin buns.
Yeah, yeah.
Scream cheesecake.
Sure, yeah.
And then with displays. So kind of like a Planet Hollywood, but with delicious pastries, and we exist.
Yeah. So you have like a glass display clay.
Yeah, there'll be cases like we have here, and things on the walls, and doing events and whatnot. So
You have a beautiful collection here. For anybody who anybody who'll be listening at home won't see any of this. We have Ash from Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yeah, screen match to the prom in season 4.
And what is that, Pinhead on the right there?
Pinhead from Hellraiser Judgment.
Very nice.
The last movie that came out.
Okay.
And the only outfit used in the movie.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I hope a lot of the stuff is fairly durable, right? Like, to stick together?
It depends what you're looking at. I mean, foam latex, tusk is not.
Yeah.
It's latex in itself is it's organic. It's going to degrade and But that's what we were trying to do, was saving.
Do the best to...
the pieces and preserve them so that they're able to be enjoyed for, yeah, for not ever, but generations.
Sure.
But right, you do get some really well-made stuff, like the Pinhead costume. That is chainmail.
Okay.
That's not fake, yeah, chainmail. That is chainmail.
Yeah. Sure, it's pretty heavy.
Yeah. Well, and Spidey here, I mean, that's the from 1979... Japanese, the Toei,
yeah, yeah,
series, mm-hmm, you know, so that's spandex, and that's held up. It's definitely aged, but, you know.
Nice. Do you guys, I mean, I'm sure you guys don't, like, sell these or anything through
we
auctions
do not.
Or anything like that.
Being a museum.
Mm, yeah. But you sell, know. But you sell, like, books and stuff and
yes,
documentaries, right?
Well, as a nonprofit,
okay,
we needed a way to...
to fund it.
Well, to get donations.
Okay. And
oddly, people are more willing to spend $30 on a book than to just donate 10 to the...
Okay, sure, sure, yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what we did. We kick-started, crowdfunded. Our third book just came out. They are available on Amazon.
Okay.
But, yeah, they... it's like taking what we're doing here into your house. So
yeah, yeah, nice.
You get the high def images of the props we show, and then stories. For instance, I just pulled up on the Pinhead page.
Yeah.
So Paul Taylor, who played Pinhead in the movie,
okay,
himself wrote this entire thing about what it was like wearing the outfit and
oh,
then
nice,
seeing
yeah,
it
yeah,
again, and
yeah,
you know, so
very cool,
yeah, we get a lot of involvement and mm, and it's fun. It's the personal stories that really go with what we're doing here.
Sure. What you were about to tell me earlier, what was the story with the tusk that you have here?
So these are the insert pieces,
okay,
insert shots. So whenever they didn't need Justin Long in the suit,
okay,
they would be using this. So Bob Kurtzman told me this head itself is the one that was used to stab Howard in the foot.
Okay.
And the tail is just used throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. Like, it's beautiful. Yeah. It reminds me a lot of like the Penguin from like Batman Returns, like
yeah,
that type of.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's not it's a different special effects person that did it, but it reminds me of that. But yeah, you know, you guys got a very cool collection here. Actually, this is my the thing is like my favorite superhero of all time, so I
yeah,
love this. You have the Michael Chiklis
We yeah, we have a lot of thing. I really like those movies.
Yeah.
Like really liked him, and Michael's portrayal is a thing in particular.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So we have his muscle suit.
Oh nice.
His torso thing I'm falling.
Yeah.
Twisting my his torso. I've got hand. I've got his animatronic hands.
Oh nice.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah, very very.
Makes
cool,
a fun display. Nice. Are you in the area?
Yeah, I'm from Chicago.
Okay, are you familiar with Comic Revolution?
I don't think so.
It's show put on by the guys that do Ace.
Okay.
And it's going to be here. I believe it's here at the beginning of end of May or beginning of June. First weekend of June.
Is that your next thing, or are you guys going elsewhere?
Yes, we
that?
Are going to be there. And I'm just pointing out because I'm going to have.
Oh, you're going to have the whole thing there?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, yeah. No, I'll have to check that out. You said beginning of May or end of May?
I think it's June 1st and 2nd.
Okay.
It's on our events page of Go HSPPA on Facebook.
Okay. And is that the best way to find you? Like
yes.
Is that HSPPA.com? Do you have
there
that
is, or? And it's that.
Okay.
But there's nothing there except a link to go to Facebook.
Okay. So, but if you look up HSPPA
yeah,
on Facebook, you'll find
yeah,
it. And you guys have like Instagram as
same
well
thing,
and stuff like that.
HSPPA.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Thanks. Thanks
yeah,
for talking
hey,
to me.
Thank
man,
you, man.
Yeah, no problem.